He thought fondly of his quarters and a large glass of the good brandy. During the last stages of his trip back, it had only been thoughts of the brandy that had kept him going. That, and memories of Evangeline. She was never that far from his thoughts, whatever he was doing. He straightened up slowly, pushing himself away from the supporting wall, and sniffed disparagingly at the various aches and pains that bothered him. He didn't really know why he was bothering with this report. All the Esper leaders had to do was go take a look at the body in his flyer to know his mission had been a success. But they'd want details. They always did. It gave them the illusion that they were in charge. And since he was dependent on the underground for his few remaining comforts, not to mention further missions, he played along, grudgingly. The elevator doors finally opened on a floor that didn't exist on any official plans, and Finley lurched out into the gloomy corridor. There never seemed to be enough lights in the underground. They probably did it deliberately, just to make the place look mysterious. Either that, or they were saving energy again. Finley realized his thoughts were drifting again, and made himself concentrate on where he was going. Down here in the subsystems, far below the surface of Golgotha, one abandoned steel corridor looked much like any other. There were a few people about, and he found the energy to grunt a greeting to them as they passed. They all nodded politely to him, and quite right, too. He was Finley Campbell, damn it. He finally stomped into the main meeting area, an abandoned workstation that the cyberrats had wiped from official memory. It was a large open space bounded with sharp-edged steel plates, and cables dangled everywhere, giving the place an unfinished, transient look. Quite suitably, really, for an underground that might have to pick up its belongings and run at any moment. After the debacle of the attempted storming of Silo 9 and the purges that followed, what remained of the underground lived from moment to moment, and tended to be even more paranoid than it used to. Finley strode up to the Esper leaders waiting for him in the center of the open space, and nodded to them briskly. There were three of them today, powerful Espers hidden behind telepathically projected images to protect their identities. At least, that was their story. Finley liked to think they did it to hide really bad skin conditions or unsuccessful hair transplants. Finley Campbell didn't believe in being in awe of anyone. The leader, usually referred to as Mr. Perfect, was a tall, naked Adonis, his impossibly defined musculature gleaming with sweat, though he never actually did anything but stand there. He had harsh, forbidding features that were just a little too classically handsome. He even had a dimple in his chin, the bastard. Next to Mr. Perfect, a mandala of ever-shifting shapes and colors hung unsupported in midair, a spinning wheel of interlocking patterns. Finley didn't like to look at that too much, either. The sudden changes in color and brightness and the way they swirled away into nothingness made his head ache. The third leader presented his or herself as a 20-foot dragon wrapped around the branches of a tall tree. It didn't speak much as a rule, but its great golden eyes rarely blinked, and it gave the impression of listening very carefully. Finley also had a lurking suspicion that just maybe the tree might be more than it seemed too. To put off making his report, Finley looked around at the medium-sized crowd attending the meeting. Finley's reports always drew a crowd. He smiled at them pleasantly, and they smiled back and bowed their heads in respect. A few even applauded. There was the usual mixture of elves in their leathers and chains, clones with the same face, and assorted hangers-on, like him, tolerated by the powers that be because they were useful. Apart from the expectant crowd, people were also darting in and out, carrying messages, making their own reports to lesser officials, or just earwigging in the hope of picking up something useful. The underground thrived on gossip. And then Finley's roving gaze juddered to a halt, and his jaw dropped as he recognized two faces at the front of the crowd. Two faces he'd never expected to see together, let alone in the underground. Adrienne Campbell and Evangeline Schreck. His wife and his lover, chatting happily together, and apparently getting on like a house on fire. His first thought was that it had to be some kind of Esper illusion, some extremely nasty joke or trick to throw him off balance, but no one apart from him knew about the two women in his life. So it had to be them. Here. Together. Finley looked quickly around for the nearest exit. Stuff his report, he had to get out of here. There were some things no man could face. Maybe if he just turned and ran very quickly.
Finlay Campbell, attend us,
said the mandala in a loud and piercing voice that echoed painfully inside his head. And that was that. Apparently, the voice hadn't just been aimed at him, as everyone else was now looking in his direction. Finlay sighed resignedly and strode forward to nod briefly to the Esper leaders. He didn't get too close. There was something about the projected illusions that put his mental teeth on edge. He gave them a brisk salute, as much for the crowd as anything, but didn't bother with standing to attention. If they wanted a soldier, they could get one. He was just a troublemaker on a grand scale, with a reputation to live down to.
Oh, can you slow your colors down a bit?
He said sharply to the mandala.
I'm starting to get seasick. I don't know why you three are bothering with the illusions anyway. I've given up being impressed for Lent. Don't you trust me after all I've done for you?
It's not a matter of trust. What you don't know, someone else can't make you tell them. Security is vital, now more than ever.
Finlay carefully didn't look in Adrienne and Evangeline's direction. He could feel cold beads of sweat forming on his forehead.
I take it you want a report. All right. I killed Lord William St. John and a lot of his people, stole his personal flyer, and got clean away. End of report.
Can I go now, please?
Back in my quarters, a large brandy is calling for me with growing impatience.
He ignored the disappointed murmurs from the crowd, his gaze fixed on Mr. Perfect as the least disturbing of the three leaders. The mandala's colors flowed suddenly in a direction his eyes tried to follow in spite of himself, but couldn't, and then its voice echoed loudly in the wide chamber.
Normally, we would press you for a more detailed report, but there is no time. We need you to go out on another mission, immediately.
Finlay stared at the leaders, for a moment almost lost for words.
You want what? I've only just got back, dammit! I had been cut at, shot at, chased halfway to hell and back, while dodging in and out the pastel towers on a glorified gravity sled, and only just got away in one piece, and you want me to go out again? Does the phrase, stick it where the sun don't shine, sound at all familiar? Have you all gone crazy? Or are you just harboring a death wish? On the ground that if you don't change your minds about this new mission in one hell of a hurry, I am going to find out what's behind these over-rehearsed mirages of yours and slice and dice all three of you into pie fillings. I am tired, hurt, and completely lacking in the sense of humor department. And no, I don't have any sense of loyalty or honor. I'm an aristocrat, remember? I'm not going anywhere till I've had a good long soak in a hot tub, three or four good meals on the same plate, and an extremely long and uninterrupted nap. I am like a disruptor. I need to recharge my batteries between jobs. Right now, my batteries are sitting in a corner crying their eyes out, and my get-up-and-go has got up and gone without leaving a forwarding address. In other words, no, I'm not bloody going!
The crowd applauded. This was what they liked to hear. Finlay looked hopefully at the Esper leaders, but they'd heard it all from him before, and it hadn't impressed them then. Mr. Perfect rippled his muscles impressively and looked sternly at Finlay.
This mission is vital. The security of the whole underground is at stake. During your absence, a previously unheard-of band of rebels attacked the city. They invaded the income tax and tithes headquarters, disrupted the computer systems with great efficiency and thoroughness, and made their escape in a Hayden Man starship. Our previous contacts with this group had been somewhat tentative, but their actions have established our new allies as a force of great power, if not subtlety. They also brought us news of great importance. Jack Random has returned to lead them.
The crowd burst into applause and scattered cheering. Finlay didn't join in. He'd heard of the professional rebel, everyone had, but the man had to be getting on in years now, and he didn't trust legends anymore. Not since he found he'd become one himself.
What's all this got to do with the new mission I'm not going on?
The applause died away as everyone looked interestedly at the Esper leaders and waited for their reply. This was why they enjoyed Finlay's reports. He always gave a great performance. Mr. Perfect looked steadily at Finlay.
Thanks to our new friend's attack, Golgotha's defenses and security systems are currently in tatters. Things are now possible that were not before. You will remember Julian Skye. It was only thanks to him that the underground was able to reform itself after Silo 9. Sky has been captured. They haven't had him long, but it is imperative that he doesn't talk. He alone knows all the locations, names, and passwords that made our reforming possible. There are blocks and defenses in his mind, but they won't last long once the Empire mind techs really get to work on him. Any other time, we would have been helpless to retrieve the situation. But in the current chaos, who knows what might be achieved by one determined man?
Who knows what might be achieved by a small army with lots of weapons? Think of all the other prisoners you could rescue.
We can't risk losing any more of our people. Sky is being held in the maximum security area. Even with the present disruption, he will undoubtedly be very well guarded by both human and inhuman guards. One man might sneak in and out, where an army could not hope to. You will be that one man.
Because I'm brave, talented, and entirely expendable?
Exactly. It helps that you are also the most likely to succeed in such a desperate mission, despite the odds. What's the matter, Finley? I thought you liked a challenge.
This isn't a challenge. It's a death sentence. And contrary to popular impressions, I don't do suicide missions. Find another sucker.
You will this time. Sky must be rescued or silenced before he talks. You will decide which option is the most practical under the circumstances.
Hello? Are you listening to me? I'm not going.
We have a trace on Sky. All espers in the underground have a telepathic beacon buried deep in their minds. The Empire hasn't silenced it yet, so we have his exact location, which means we can teleport you right to him.
All right. I'll bite. What's the snag?
The Empire must know about the beacon. They've captured enough espers before and silenced their beacons quite efficiently. If Sky hasn't been blocked, it can only be because he is being set up as bait in a trap. They know how badly we need his silence. They're expecting a small army. They won't expect you. However, we feel it only fair to warn you that while we can teleport you in, we will almost certainly not be able to teleport you out again. The Empire will no doubt have taken measures to prevent that.
Let me get this straight. You're going to drop me right in the middle of the Golgotha Interrogation Center, surrounded by legions of armed guards, both human and inhuman, and it's up to me to free Sky and fight my way out?
That's right. A walk in the park. We have every confidence in you. After all, since it's so obviously a trap, there's always the chance they won't be expecting anyone to actually walk into it, let alone one man on his own. You should take them entirely by surprise.
I can't help thinking that should is the operative word there. I told you, I don't do suicide missions. And I haven't heard one thing so far that's going to change my mind.
That's why they wanted me to be here.
Evangeline walked slowly forward to join him, their eyes holding contact all the way. She put out her arms to hold him, but he stopped her with an upraised hand.
Don't. I'm covered in muck and blood. I'll get your dress dirty.
Evangeline looked him over, trying not to wince at the sight of his wounds, and shook her head sadly.
More blood. More pain and suffering on my behalf. I've always known you only do this for me. You've never given a damn for the rebellion or the underground, have you?
I needed something to do down here, something to keep me busy. And I do care, in my way. I still remember what I saw in Silo 9, down in Wormboy Hell. I will not allow that kind of suffering and horror to continue. I have sworn a death oath, upon my blood and my honor, to fight to put an end to Silo 9 and the system that produced it. The underground's the best way for me to do that. But I'm still not going on this mission, Evie. Not even for you. I know my limitations.
So do I. You're quite right. It probably will get you killed, but we need you to do this mission. I could come with you if you like. Fight at your side, die beside you.
No, I don't want that. I nearly lost you in Silo 9. I won't risk that again. I need to know you're safe. I wouldn't want to live without you. Is this Sky bastard really so important?
If he talks, the underground will have to scatter again. Thousands of clones and espers and their supporters would risk capture or death all over again. It could take anything from 10 to 20 years before we could pull ourselves back together again, and that's being optimistic. The underground might not survive at all. Certainly the rebellion would be set back indefinitely. It's the timing that's so ironic. Things are finally going our way, Finley. These new rebels, with Jack Random to lead them, could be the final spark we need to blow the whole corrupt empire apart.
What do you want me to do, Evie?
I want what you want. For us to be here, safe, together. But what we want doesn't matter anymore. If Sky talks, what little we have will be taken from us. You have to go, Finley. You're the only one who stands a chance of bringing this off and coming back alive.
And if I don't? If I get myself killed fighting for the damn cause?
Then part of me will die with you.
Evangeline looked at him steadily.
I know what we're asking of you. What I'm asking. It's tearing me apart. But
you're still asking.
Yes. I know my duty. To every Esperin clone who suffered in Silo 9 or suffers every day as non-people in the Empire.
Finley smiled briefly.
You always did fight dirty.
I love you, Finley. If you say no, I'll still love you.
I love you, Evie. Even though you're asking.
They looked at each other for a long time, seeing nothing but each other. Their love so strong and fierce, it filled the chamber. The crowd was silent, holding its breath. So Adrienne cleared her throat and stepped forward.
Don't do it, Finley. You'd have to be crazy to take on a mission like this. Everyone's been telling me what a great fighter you are, but no one could face these odds and come back in one piece.
Finley smiled coldly at her.
You never did believe in me, Adrienne.
That's not the point. Let them find somebody else. There's always somebody else.
There isn't time. Weren't you listening?
Damn it, stop fighting me. I'm worried about you.
Really? What brought that on?
Damned if I know. I don't even know what I'm doing here. But Evangeline and I have become rather close just recently, much to our mutual surprise. And since she's clearly not stupid or easily impressed, I'm forced to the opinion that you must be something of the hero and fighter she says you are. Though if you're that good an actor, you should be on the stage. But this assignment has suicide mission written all over it. You might as well walk into the arena with no weapons and one leg tied behind your back. Don't go, Finley. I don't want you dying before I've had a chance to finally get to know you. Tell them to stop their mission. There's always another way if you look hard enough.
You don't think I can do it, do you? Well, you're wrong, Eddie. I can jump in there, grab the bastard, and be gone before the gods know what's hit them. I'm a fighter, Adrienne. The best damn fighter you'll ever meet.
You're not listening to me. Oh, but then you never did. You talk to him, Evie. But I want him to go. Please, Finley, do it for me. I don't want to end up in whatever they build to replace Silo 9.
It won't come to that. I'd never let them take you.
Even you couldn't protect me from the kind of forces Julian Sky would set in motion. And I think I'd rather die than be taken.
I'd kill every guard and soldier in the Empire before I let them hurt you. All right, I'll go. But if by some miracle I get out of this alive and reasonably intact, I want something for myself.
He glared across at the Esper leaders.
You hear that, you bastards?
We are not surprised. What do you want?
I want Valentine.
Finley smiled widely, and there was no humor in it at all. Just a death's head grin.
I want his head on a stick.
Valentine Wolfe was once an enthusiastic supporter of the Underground. He'd provided financial backing and whatever support and influence he could bring to bear without compromising himself. But then he waged a sudden and highly successful vendetta against the Campbells, and became the head of his own family when his father died leading the assault on Tower Campbell. As the new Wolf, Valentine had access to immense wealth and power, and apparently lost all interest in the Underground and the Rebellion. He no longer came to meetings, and ignored all attempts at contact. So the Underground left him strictly alone. A few hardliners in the elves wanted him dead as a precautionary measure. So far, the underground leaders had said no. Valentine had remained silent, and they didn't want to upset or alarm other clan members working with the underground. At the very least, it would set a bad precedent. And as the wolf, Valentine was very well protected. An unsuccessful attack by the underground might very well prompt the very disclosure of information they were so desperate to avoid. But if they let Finley kill him, working on his own, they could pass it off as a personal feud. Just a Campbell and a wolf fighting again. It was a tempting thought. As long as Valentine was alive, the information in his head was a threat hanging over them. While not as great a threat as Julian Skye, he could do a lot of damage, if he chose. Finley knew all this was going through the leaders' minds. He didn't need to be a telepath for that. They and he had already argued both sides of this problem many times before. They'd always said no. But things were different now.
"Very well,"
said the dragon, curled around his tree. He fixed his glowing golden eyes on Finley.
"In the unlikely event that you return from this mission successful and alive, you may pursue your vendetta against the wolf. The underground will neither hinder nor support you. All consequences will be upon your own head. We will, of course, if necessary, discard and renounce you."
"Sounds good to me. I've always known where I stood with you."
"Be clear as to the purpose of your mission. You must either rescue or silence Julian Skye, according to the situation you encounter. He must not be allowed to talk. Once we have teleported you in, you're on your own. We can't help you. We can, however, offer a little support in advance."
One of the elves stepped forward and presented Finley with a small, flat box. It was polished steel with a single button on it, colored a dramatic red. Finley hefted it thoughtfully. He'd never seen one before, but he knew what the box was, what it had to be. A mind bomb. A terror weapon despised and outlawed throughout the Empire. Once activated, it attacked the minds of all non-espers, disorienting and scrambling their thoughts. Its victims hallucinated, then became insane, and finally catatonic. It was a vicious, take-no-prisoners weapon, a last resort for the truly desperate. It was very rare. Like the S-blockers, the mind bomb was based around living Esper brain tissue. It was almost unthinkable for the Esper leaders to admit to possessing such a thing, let alone handing one over to him. They really must think he wouldn't be coming back to talk about it. Finley couldn't help wondering whether the brain tissue had come from a volunteer, and if it was still somehow aware and thinking. He repressed a shudder and slipped the metal box into his pocket. He nodded respectfully to the elves and threw the leaders another brisk salute, indicating the audience was over as far as he was concerned. He took Evangeline by the arm and led her off to one side. Idrienne followed. The images of the Esper leaders disappeared like popping soap bubbles. The crowd began to break up, chattering animatedly. Finley had given them enough material to keep them gossiping for weeks. Finley knew the underground expected him to kill Skye. They thought him incapable of subtlety. They also thought he'd kill Skye to make it easier for him to escape the interrogation center. They were wrong both times. Finley was determined to bring Skye back alive. Partly because he'd failed to rescue so many others from Silo 9 and had sworn never to fail again, and partly to prove to the Espers that they were wrong about him. He wasn't just a killing machine, a weapon they could just aim and unleash on their enemies. Despite everything that had happened to him, he was still more than that. He had to be, for Evangeline's sake. He smiled at her and nodded briskly to Adrienne.
"Never thought to see you two together without weapons in your hands. How the hell did you get together?"
"Circumstances can make for strange bedfellows. I've always known that."
"I'll bet you have."
"You don't have to take this mission. Despite everything I've said, I don't want you to die."
"I do have to take this mission, and not just for the obvious reasons. You never did understand why I needed to fight in the arena. I need the action, the thrill of the blood, the balancing on a blade's edge between life and death. Now that my other life in the Empire is gone, I need the thrill a little more. It's all I have to keep me occupied."
You still have me?
I hardly see you these days. It used to be, when I was with you, I could forget the arena, the blood, and the killing. But now, you have your responsibilities in the world above, and so little time to be with me. You have to understand what drives me, Evie. It isn't very pretty, or honorable, but it's me. I need to kill, like a predator in a world of prey. Nothing's happened to change that. It's just that the life I'm living now has brought it closer to the surface.
The world above doesn't matter. And my responsibilities can go to hell. There are too many of them these days. They clog up my head and keep me from seeing what's really important. I'll move down here permanently if that's what you need, and to hell with what the underground wants. In the end, there's just you and me and what we mean to each other. Everything else is just clutter.
Finley took her in his arms and kissed her, and their passion beat on the air like the wings of a giant bird. Adrienne watched thoughtfully. It had been a day of surprises. This new Finley was a man she'd only seen in glimpses before, puzzling flashes of a hidden nature that had disturbed and frightened her. She didn't like to think she could have been so wrong about someone so close to her. Pretty Finley in his gorgeous outfits, a mad dog killer from the arena. And Evangeline, a quiet, mousy little thing at court, with hidden horrors and a kind of courage Adrienne could only marvel at. They were both a little ragged around the edges just now, but Adrienne liked them a lot more. She'd always had a weakness for the mentally challenged. Finley and Evangeline had been in different worlds for too long, becoming different people who had nothing in common except their love. But in the end, it was enough. It was strong and real enough to hold even them together. Adrienne could recognize that. She'd have had to be blind not to. But for once, she didn't know what to do for the best. Finley would have to be really crazy to go on this mission, but all the signs were he was a long way down that road already. Nothing she could say or do would change his mind. She wasn't used to that. She'd never been in a situation before where her arrogance and mastery of words couldn't get her what she wanted. She'd relied on her acid tongue to get her own way for so long that she was frankly lost for an alternative. She didn't want to lose this new, interesting Finley now she'd found him. She was surprised to find how much that mattered to her. Finley and Evangeline finally came up for air, and she coughed meaningfully. It was a good cough. On a good day, she could silence a room with it. The two lovers turned to look at her without letting go of each other.
Finley, before you say anything, Adrienne and I have become friends. She gave me the strength to do something very unpleasant but utterly necessary that I've been putting off for far too long, and no, I'm not going to tell you what. Suffice it to say, it's because of her support that I'll be able to spend more time down here in the future.
Thank you for that, at least, Addie.
You're so welcome.